Everyone, welcome back. It is another episode of Inside Boxing. We're presented by PPV.com, Uncrowned Network, Yahoo Sports. You know the deal by now. Let's get into it. It is Sunday, August 16th. Just watched Clarissa Shields fill out the State Farm Arena in Atlanta. A crazy turnout. She wins in the sixth round, stops Kay Scott, becomes champion once again at middleweight. We'll talk about that. Some other nonsense in the boxing world. It wouldn't be an episode if we didn't have nonsense. Jana Beck back in title contention. Some Teofimo stuff. Some mailbag questions. Because, guys, this isn't the most busy time in boxing. You know, I looked at my laptop yesterday and I was like, what are we going to talk about today? But we always have topics, Chris. And we always bring the heat. How are you, Chris Algieri?
I'm good. We're in the dregs of summer. And it's not just the heat down here in South Florida that's wearing on us. It's the long drought of the summer for boxing. Because that's how it's always been. The last couple of years, like with the influx of Turkey and the ring cards, like we were getting all these like weird like July dates and early August dates. Now things are kind of going back to status quo. And this time of year is always historically been slow. So we're here. And so, of course, we're going to be talking about nonsense. Not a lot of fights to talk about.
We got Teofimo versus Rolly next week. Fear not.
Very good fight.
We'll talk about that next week. We'll talk about that a little bit today. I'll be headed out to California for this Amanda Serrano card on TikTok. So that's going to be fun as well. So just got to get through this weekend. It's fine. We still have a Clarissa Shields event. And they are becoming events. Clarissa Shields is a bona fide ticket seller. She's a top five male or female ticket seller. Her fights are now events. Stars are coming out. Usher was in the crowd. Floyd Mayweather, Terrence Crawford, Shakur Stevenson. And she can fight.
Brandy was there. Brandy was there. Ray J, Brandy was there. Like, that's awesome.
Ray J fought on the card.
Which is, we have to touch on that, but I'd rather not.
Oh, God, that was dreadful. But, and she can fight. She knocks out Kay Scott. She becomes a middleweight champion once again, Clarissa Shields. She is a lightning rod. She is hated. She is loved. She's debated. I'm debating people right now on Twitter about who's the number one pound for pound. Is it her or Katie Taylor? It's the recipe to be a star in boxing in 2026 is to be loved and hated and to be talked about. Because I cover women's boxing. I work for MVP. A lot of these women's events, they come and go. There's very little chatter about them before. There's very little chatter about them while they're happening. And there ain't any chatter about them afterwards. But there is a lot of discussions about Clarissa Shields, where she stands, who she should fight, and all that. So hats off to her, hats off to Salida, hats off to everyone, because this wasn't the case like 3 years ago. It's a phenomenon, and I'm giving her full props.
She has captured the culture around boxing, and she's done a fantastic job doing that, her and her team. You know, like you said, she's a lightning rod. She doesn't stop. She's working all the time. And by quote-unquote working, I'm talking about live streaming. She's been doing, you know, she started that a couple years ago. We're like, what the hell is she doing? Well, this is what she was doing. It worked out really well. She has built an incredibly deep fan base that they're diehards, they're fanatics, and that's why the events are the way they are. And I think even male fighters could take a page out of the book of what we're seeing with Clarissa Shields. She's taking advantage of every opportunity there is on social media and the technology world that we live in right now to become a bona fide star. God bless her. Good job. Well done. She deserves it. She's fantastic. But yes, I've called a bunch of her last couple fights. I've called a lot of her fights of her career, actually. And the change, the shift that has happened now, she's a legit star. Like it's impressive to watch how fast it's turned.
The Papoose link up. I mean, I know it is romantic. I know they are dating. Yeah. That was huge.
He's also a huge boxing fan, by the way. I got to call a fight with him a couple months back on one of the Demetrius Salida shows, which was awesome. That was something I never thought I was going to say. I'm like, I'm calling a main event with Papoose right next to me, one of the New York rapping legends who
Alphabet Freestyle will live on forever.
I grew up listening to this guy, and now I'm like calling fights with him. But he's a legitimate boxing fan. Like I was very impressed with, one, his boxing knowledge, but two, how much he loves the sport. And it shows in how this whole thing with win records and how they're progressing forward. But yeah, that link up is going to be legendary in the sport.
Yeah, I mean, it's a great thing there. Like, it's brought up more eyeballs. Like, she's bringing out a whole different type of crowd. It reminds me of, like, tank fights. Like, tank fights.
Yeah, the culture. It's that specific culture. Like, ATL is a perfect place to do it because tank has fought there and done really well down there as well. I'm curious to see how she does in other venues. Like, obviously, she's got Flint, Michigan. She got, you know, up in Detroit. You know, I've done a couple of shows for her up there, for her cards up there. And, you know, ATL is perfect place to make this happen.
Well, that's what's impressive to me is, like, she's doing it outside of Michigan because I worked a show of hers 2021 right out of the pandemic. She still was a name, still, and you know, and all that. And that wasn't, like, anything we're seeing now. But she's moved out of Detroit. Like, she'll always have Detroit. She'll always have Little Caesars Arena. She'll always have that as her fallback and home base. But the reason why I bring up Tank, because Tank – went around to all different arenas, went around to all different markets, LA, he went to Atlanta, and sold out those buildings. And yeah, whatever. Like, are there some comp tickets? There's comp tickets for every event, like male or female, like outside of like a Floyd Mayweather event. Like, most of these seats like are being sold, and there's some being comped as well. So I don't want to hear that. She's also very good. Let's not bury the lead here. She can fight and she's getting better. And last night she had an overmatched opponent in there. Kay Scott only had like 6 or 7 pro fights, had a long amateur career, looked the part, was super muscular and built and all that. But some of the worst technique I think I've ever seen. Like, I was like, this girl's going to get killed.
Yeah,
she was fighting fire with fire.
She looked like Frankenstein right out of the gate. Like, she's big. Like, everybody's like, oh, she's bigger, she's taller, she's longer. But like, she came out just like plodding, head straight up in the air, stiff. And she, again, she's 42 and she's been a pro for 3 years and she's 5-1-1, you know, before the fight. Like, it was certainly an overmatched opponent, but it didn't matter. The story was Clarissa Shields, and there's a lot of big fights down the line for her, but she did exactly what she was supposed to do with that kind of opponent. And at the end of the day, it was still a world title fight. That woman had two world titles. So she's, you know, they are Clarissa's to begin with. She basically, anyone else since her has been just babysitting them before she came back down to mop the floor with everybody. But that's just, you know, that's just what we're dealing with Clarissa at these higher weights.
Shields landed 76 power shots in the 6 rounds. In 2 minute rounds too. Yep. There was that one round where Scott landed some good shots. I think, what was it? Was that
round 4 or 5? When she backed Clarissa up against the ropes. She kept it there for a little bit.
I guess she felt like she couldn't outbox her. So I'm going to go in there and just try to bless her out, which, you know, that's a valiant effort. It created a knockout. And Shields, that's only Shields' 4th knockout.
Yeah.
Like, she's not a knockout puncher. But she, I would say last night, she was sitting down on her shots a lot more.
She has been the last couple fights.
She's not going to be like a knockout puncher moving forward, but like adding that into your repertoire can't hurt, especially when it's all about who's in front of you. It's all relative. Like you always say, like, you have an opponent who's willing to stand and trade, who's overmatched, like, you can get her out of there. Like, I doubt she'll do that if she fights Michaela Mayer. She's not going to go in there and sit down like crazy like that on those shots. I don't think so.
She's not going to be able to. Michaela's going to be moving and boxing. So, but also, I want to talk technique for a little bit. Because that left hook is new. I've watched her develop that the last couple fights. And I was talking to Robert Garcia about this. One of the most impressive things for me watching Clarissa's development, you know, because she's only 31, like, and women can fight a lot deeper into their 30s than men can at a high level. She's getting better all the time. She's still improving. Her and John David Jackson are still working in the gym, working on things. That left hook is new. And she landed like 3 of them in that round before she finished Scott, that one that really rocked her. And it was actually, you know, it's funny. It's the left hook that she got dropped in sparring with by that lightweight fighter. And she was throwing it too wide. She's fixed it. That thing is tight now. And that's why she was able to beat Scott to the punch every single time. Because they were trading left hooks. Their head was off the line on the right hand. And then instead of finishing there on the right, she was coming back with the left hook, the cleanup left hook, and it was really, really short. And Scott just didn't have the technique to combat that because they were throwing left hooks at the same time. It's just Clarissa's was tighter and got there first. That's a new weapon that she has developed under the tutelage of John David Jackson over the last 3 fights, and I've watched it develop. So the fact that she's where she is but is still trying to improve, very impressive.
Yeah, and those moments where she was letting her hands go, like, that's when she gets a little vulnerable, I think. Like, she's, like, I wouldn't say sloppy's not the right word, but, like,
what
do we want from women's boxing? Like, my biggest thing is, like, we don't see knockouts and we don't see, like, toe-to-toe action. And then we have Shields go in there and do that. Like, I see some people criticizing her form, like, oh, she looks weak or she looks arm punches or sloppy. I didn't say that. that's something people are bringing to me. Sloppy when she throws those combinations. Like, what do you want then? Like, it's not male boxing. Like, it's female. It's women's boxing. And Shields goes in there and tries to shoe Sean and tries to throw a lot of punches. So I like that from her last night. When the shoe started coming out and really letting it go, I was like, all right, here we go. Got a scrap.
Listen, she's hyper-aggressive. That's part of the allure of her style. She makes her fights. You know, the fights are they're entertaining, you know, and because she does throw a lot of punches. She's not looking to just the box. She's looking to beat you up. And, like, she has a real mean streak in her. She's not a puncher. She's, like you said, she's never going to be a puncher. She doesn't – that's not part of her style. And in terms of her rotation or punches, you know, people talk about arm punches, whatever. At least she's aggressive and she's throwing. She's not a huge puncher. Listen – we're going to talk about Katie Taylor in a little bit. Katie Taylor is not a puncher. She's not a big rotation person. She's an arm puncher as well. She just throws very fast punches in combination and lets her hands go. She's very smart in her tactics. She's not as reckless, quote unquote, as Clarissa is. But Clarissa is becoming more entertaining fighting the way that she's fighting. But, of course, there's going to be people who are going to poo-poo everything because that's just Twitter.
Well, she's just very she goes out there and says that she can beat Rolly Romero, which I think
is we need to if I have any knock on Clarissa, it's going to be that. We need to leave that one alone. Stop that.
Yeah, but it's a calculated PR move.
Yeah. Now that's true. That's very true. It's very smart.
You got to get the boxing world talking about you.
Oh, she gets everybody talking. There's no,
that's what I mean. She's
no
got
doubt.
Floyd showing up. Yeah. She's got Shakur in her corner, Bud. Keyshawn Davis made an appearance. Like, the fighters come out to see her, and that's how you're going to get the male demographic involved and interested in her fights. Like, once again, I work with MVP, full disclosure. My biggest thing, it's like we have a great fight card last week in Orlando, like two title fights, all four really good matchups, but there's not many people chatting about it because It's just there's no bridge between the male, like the majority that watch boxing are males.
Yeah.
I mean, that's just the fact. They're not invested in women's boxing. They're not watching some of these ESPN cards, even though they're really good. They're invested in Clarissa Shields because their favorite male fighters are showing up. They're talking about her and she's putting herself in the discussion, literally, like saying that she can beat Rolly Romero, which is an absolute joke. But you know what I mean?
You said it from the top. The event. She's an event now. It's beyond the actual boxing. It's almost it's. I don't want to say it's like Floyd, but it's Floyd Mayweather-esque because there's so many people didn't like the way Floyd fought, but you didn't miss a fight. You didn't. If you had a chance to go to the fight, you're going there. It's not going to be the most entertaining fight. It's not going to be Gotti Ward. It's never going to be Gotti Ward with Floyd. You're either going to go because you want to see him lose, or you're going to go because everyone's effing going. Everyone's going to be there. You're going to be there. You want to get seen. It's an event. You want to go.
It's an event. That's why I brought up Tank, because we've been to a lot of Tank fights.
Yeah, but Tank knocked people out. Like, Tank is
No. My point is, like, there's a majority of people are there to see him knock someone out, boxing fans. But there's a large portion in those Tank crowds and in the Shields crowds that don't even know what boxing is about. Mm-hmm. This is a night out. This is a way to be seen. That's great. It's entertainment value.
It's a night to wear the mink, like wait, like when Ali fought Frazier. Like, I'm gonna put on my mink coat and go out and stunt. Like, that's part of it. And that's the event portion. She's not gonna male fight fans, male casuals are not gonna tune in to watch any female fight. That's not what they're there for. I'm sorry. That's the truth of the matter.
It's the truth, man. That's the truth. I see it firsthand. I see it.
I know people are going to hate on that, but it's just the truth, guys.
It's not hate. It just is what it is. Like, the numbers are, you can just see the ratings. I'm on Twitter all day long. You guys know this. I'm chronically online. I don't see any chatter about women's boxing.
Dan, did you touch grass today? Did you touch grass?
Yes, I went out and got a banana latte. A little too sugary for me.
So you went to the cafe in your building, in your complex?
Yeah.
Okay.
Went up to the roof. Went up to the roof, though. Got some sunlight. Was at the pool yesterday all day here in Long Island. Today, I'm going to go to my parents' house, I'm going to do some grounding. You know what that is, right?
When you touch, of course. I do it every single morning when I let my dogs out. That's a beautiful thing about having a home. Having a home is a nightmare because it's so much work. But getting to open the door, walk by the pool, and put my feet on the ground with my dogs barefoot.
Nothing better. That's why I moved to the burbs.
That's right. Well,
couldn't do that in Queens.
No.
Sirens.
I grew up in the burbs, so I'm right back.
Before this. Yeah. Yeah, Shields is a star, and there was a lot to talk about with her, like, outside of the ring. Obviously, inside the ring, she becomes middleweight champion once again. Shields has two of the belts. The other two belts, three belts, belong to Tam Tebow, who is signed by MVP, who won last week, who is a 6-foot southpaw with power, with limited experience in the pros. She's got three belts. She's got two of the other belts and the ring belt. And I have people saying she's not ready. Lou DiBella, who I respect highly. Dan, you're crazy for calling for that fight next. Do it in 18 months, where it will be even bigger. And I'm sorry, Lou, I disagree. The fight ain't getting any bigger in 18 months. It's big. It's as big now as it will be in a year, 2 years, 3 years. Because it just is what it is. Tam Tebow does not have a huge fan base. She's unknown. Clarissa Shields just put asses in seats against a fighter in Kay Scott who no one even knew who she was.
She put asses in seats.
Doesn't matter.
She put asses in seats, and then she put belt to ass in fight night.
It's crazy. So, like, we're not marinating women's fights, guys. We're not doing that. No. We're not marinating women's fights. It's not going to be
we
any
never
bigger.
Have.
It doesn't need to be. Like, it's going to be 15,000 to 18,000 tomorrow, next week, 2 years from now if she fights Tam Tebow. The same amount of people are going to be tuning in. It just is what it is. It's not a Taylor Serrano type fight. I just think it's the most competitive fight for Shields at middleweight. Because afterwards, Shields brought up, she brought up Lauren Price, who is a career welterweight. I'm like, okay, that's interesting. What's the allure there? And then she brings up Michaela Mayer, who has never fought higher than 152. Her next fight is 154 next week against Chantel Cameron, a fight that she could very well lose. Like, I would like to see Mayer versus Shields. I think that's a good competitive fight, and also think it's a big marquee fight. But still, a lot of things have to happen for that to go right. Like, I think the best, most competitive fight right now for Shields at middleweight is a true middleweight in Tebow.
I'm going to push back a little bit. I like the Tebow fight. I like it right now, but I think it's a semifinal for Michaela Mayer. I think Mayer is the best fight out there for Clarissa. But that's just because of the landscape of where they're at. The women at these weights are just, they're not on the level of Clarissa. She is head and shoulders above everyone. That's why she's calling up these smaller prices and Mayers. And that's why, you know, she's kind of glossing over Tebow.
Although, did bring her up, though. I give her credit, Shields. She mentioned her name.
Shields is chasing smoke. So she is not like a lot of the current crop of male fighters who get chatty on Twitter and then don't sign any contracts. Clarissa will fight absolutely everyone and anyone. And this is another reason why I was giving her props about her continually getting better, because she's continually chasing challenges. You have to continue to get better if you're going to chase challenges, and she does. So I will give her that. I like the Tebow fight. We mentioned, now she's only got five fights too. And I was, you know, talking badly about Scott because she was 5'5", 5'1", 1. But the amateur pedigree and the physical advantages and the age of Tebow makes the fight a lot different. It's going to come down to with Tebow, like, yeah, will she be better in 18 months? 1,000%. Will she have more experience? Yes, 1,000%. But to your point, will it be a bigger fight? No, I agree with you 100%. The only difference is that she might have a better chance to actually be able to have a game plan for 10 rounds. Because that's the biggest thing. When you're a fighter like Tebow, no one's fighting Clarissa head-to-head, Tebow included. I don't care who you are. No one's fighting her head-to-head and beat her. You have to box her, move her, and strategically fight 10 rounds against her. Tebow has the ability physically and skill-wise to do that, but does she have the experience to come out with a 10-round game plan in that way in order to win enough rounds to see on the other side, or survive also to deal with the pressure of someone coming at you the way that Clarissa does? It's a good fight. I do think it's too early for her in terms of being like super competitive or having – I would favor Clarissa, of course, but it doesn't matter. You're a world champion. There's no more marinating anymore. There's no more like, oh, well, they're not ready. What do you mean not ready? You're a world champion. I'm a world champion. You're a world champion. We have to unify. That's how it works. So that should be the next fight. And I think Mayer, if she gets past Cameron, which you said is not a gimme, then yeah, we start talking about that one.
Yeah, I understand why it would be Mayer. I got the price one is interesting to me. Like
I don't know. She's like 5'5". Like Michaela Mayer
was her number one name.
Michaela Mayer is my size. Like she's tall and she's long, big, and she can box, and she's heavier. Like she cuts weight to make 54. You know, like you know, not a ton. I'm not. No offense, Michaela. She cuts weight to make 54. She's not a small even for the 50s. But Price is not a big person.
Yeah, Price was the first name that Shields mentioned. I was a little shocked by that.
You know why though? It's the British. It's the UK. That's I understand. Because listen, say what you will about Caressa, dude. She's smart, dude. Nah, she's smart. She knows what she's doing.
But if you're filling up these, I think it's just not a fluke. Like Shields' next fight isn't going to be in front of 10 people. Like this is like a bona fide thing. Like it's all about momentum when you sell tickets like this and you put on events. Like the next one is going to be just like this. So like I don't think she has to go to the UK. Like
do you think she sells in the UK? Like if she goes to fight Price in the UK, do you think they can do 20 plus? Okay.
I think it's different. I don't know Price's marketability. I don't know how popular she is there. But
do the UK fans care enough about Shields?
I think they do. I think they know her from the Savannah Marshall fight, biggest fight of 2022. Like 2022 was one of the worst years for male boxing. Like nothing was happening. And then the women stepped up in a big way between her, Katie Taylor, Serrano, Bumgarner, Mayer fight. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know if Price's marketability is there. My point is like, I don't think Shields has to depend on that anymore. So I did think of that first. It's like, oh, she brings the British girl. Like, there's a whole market out there, but Shields is a whole market here.
Well, think about it. Think about this real quick. Where's Scott from?
Australia.
That's the other big market right now, right? What are the big markets? We got this side of the world, and we got Australia, and we got UK, and then Australia. Sure. So, yeah, there's obviously some kind of brain trust that is going through this way. I think there's a reason why the Brits were brought up.
Yeah, there's supposedly there's a ban on Clarissa Shields by MVP because of the slap to Alicia Bumgarner.
Did she actually slap her at the video?
I was in the room. I didn't get a good look. I was with Rampage. We were streaming. And I feel like that fight's
I don't even consider that a fight.
It's not a fight. That's just them jockeying for like popularity. Like women's boxing, women's hip hop, women's anything is like there's no very little cooperation. There's very little camaraderie.
It's very dog eat dog.
Yeah, there can only be one, and I don't understand that. Like I like that. What's her name? Dubois supports Clarissa Shields. I think Mayer was very supportive afterwards, but there's clearly some type of thing going on between Bumgarner and Serrano against Shields. Like there's little barbs being thrown. Apparently Shields wore the same outfit up on the stage that Bumgarner wore. It's like they can only wear so many outfits. I don't know. Just like the petty part of women's boxing.
I will say this, and I'm going to get flack for this one too. I hate this fashion show bullshit leading up to fights now. But
they
got to
do it.
I know they have to, but it's like it's the same thing with the WNBA. It's like, oh, what's their fit walking in? It's like, I don't like this.
Sex sells, Chris.
No, it's not sex. It's fashion. It's not sex.
Some of the angles that are the social media team and MVP when they're on the stage at the weigh-ins, straight cheeks.
That's not fashion. I was talking about when they're walking into the arena, they've got a wedding dress on and they're walking into the arena before a fight, like. You know.
But it's way different now with the weigh-ins of the women and the weigh-ins. Like they I don't know who started it, but like. Even last week, like Sugar Neeks, and they're attractive girls, and they wear.
Yeah, but Neeks has always been. She's always been that.
Or Ebony Bridges.
Oh well, yeah, she was the OnlyFans spokesperson.
But it's become a thing now. Like the
women I'm just saying, I don't like it, Dan. I don't like it. We're fighters.
I think they have to. Sadly, they have to do it. They're trying to get that male attention.
I'm being old CA. I'm being 42-year-old CA here who's like, back in my day, Marvin Hagler would be rolling over in his grave.
I mean, working for a pretty much female or woman's boxing promotion.
I like cheeks as much as anybody, but I like...
But it's so... Yeah, when they get the... Like, we'll see next weekend in
That's what ring card girls used to be for. Now the fighters are hotter than the ring card girls.
The fighters are wearing less clothes than the ring cartels these days.
Exactly.
Dude, when I first, my dad took me to fights as a young kid, like super young, like 6, 7 years old.
You were probably even younger than that. You probably just don't remember
it. The girls were wearing nothing. The ring girls. G-strings. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Like floss. Dental floss.
Back when America was cool.
Like, that was my first introduction to women, were ring card girls. Wearing
No wonder you have so many problems with women.
If it was in like smoky ballrooms in like Atlantic City, and you know, it was an interesting time.
So that's where the term smokers comes from. Like a smoker is an unsanctioned boxing match, and the reason for that is because they would literally go into gyms, board up the windows, and they would all be smoking cigars. So it was a fog of smoke. So they were called smokers.
Secondhand smoke, looking at G-strings.
I fought in those in kickboxing, actually. I was some smokers in kickboxing. I have some
affect your lungs?
I have some, off-the-record fights, I should say.
Tijuana specials?
Nah, dude. Jersey, New York, Long Island.
Does it affect your lungs, though, with the smoke?
Nah. You don't even notice it.
Oh, the best thing, too, with the ring girls, my dad's old partner at CompuBox, Logan Hobson, still with us today, legendary figure. The girls would walk by, and he would whistle at them, and he'd go, "Oh, miss." And he'd go, "Oh, miss." And they would wink at me, and I would just get the biggest kick out of it. Man, those are good times. Anyway.
I feel like your therapist right now, like your relationship therapist, like, see, Dan, this is where the trauma comes from. These
being around boxing at age 6 is not conducive for your long-term
not your love life health. not a great thing.
Let's talk
it's
about
healthy, the, it's healthier than being in the ring. You're gonna live longer than
that's
me.
True. That's for sure. Well, who knows, you're way healthier than me.
Yeah, that's true.
The pound for pound list, I hate pound for pound list, but I felt like stirring up the masses. I feel like some danger. Put out my pound
danger.
For pound women's some pound. I put out my pound for pound women's list. I got number 1 Katie Taylor, number 2 Shields, 3 Meyer, 4 Gabriela Fandora, 5 Amanda Serrano. The pro Shields crowd very angry at me. How could you put Shields over Katie Taylor? Easy. Katie Taylor has better wins. Katie Taylor's 3 wins over Amanda Serrano are better than any of Shields' wins. It's not Shields' fault that the opposition isn't up to snuff. It isn't Shields' fault that she's so much better. I just have Taylor slightly ahead. It's a very, very, very close 1-2. When Katie Taylor retires after her fight this summer, it's going to be Shields number 1 for the foreseeable future. But as for right now, I'm going with Taylor over Shields as number 1.
Yeah, I think the discussion is going to come down to a couple things. Like, you can't do all time yet because, as I said earlier, Clarissa's only 31. She has a lot of career left, and her accomplishments are insane. You know, she's already got 2 gold medals, multiple. You know, I saw some graphic. She's like 21-time world champion at this point, like in terms of titles and that she's gotten from the various weight classes she jumped up and down. But if you're looking at it right now, the inactivity of Katie Taylor really hurts her in the standing.
I know.
She hasn't fought in a year.
So clearly at the end.
She hasn't fought in a year, and she's not in a fight where we're like, you know, it's not like Amanda Serrano. It's not a danger fight. It's literally a walk-off fight. So
I don't think Serrano's been fighting anyone stiff competition.
No, she hasn't, which is why she's not going to be in the pound for pound list on my list right now either. I got Clarissa number 1 because of what I just said about Katie Taylor not being active right now. During their heights, that's the thing. Like, during Katie's height, Clarissa wasn't at her height yet. So I had Katie pound for pound for all those years because I first of all, I love the way that I like Katie Taylor a lot, the way that she fights, her style. She throws a lot of punches. She's aggressive. Also, her strength of schedule was ridiculous. The women that she fought, if you really look at her record, her entire career was top flight females, top flight, the whole career. And obviously the trilogy with Amanda Serrano is historical. But right now, I got Clarissa. And like you said, it's not her fault. The competition is not there, but she handles them the way she's supposed to, and she stays
dominates
busy. Dominates, and she keeps pushing the limit. And just I'm watching her get better and better, and I don't see any holes. And she's young still. She's 31. Like, how old's Katie? She's gotta be 39. Right.
Well, Katie's close to 40.
Yeah, and
Serrano's my age.
We started to see degradation in Katie, but she was already at the 35. Like, do we have 4 more years of Clarissa getting better? before we see if they start to see a dip like that. Like,
probably.
The all-time discussion can't even be discussed because Clarissa literally has another third of her career to go if she chooses. And what she can accomplish in that time can make her number one and number two a mile away. And that's how much time she has left on the landing strip. But in terms of right now, it's the activity for me because Clarissa, she just fought, right? She just fought last night and then she fought, what, in January?
She wants to fight again end of the year.
That's another thing. She's staying active. She's jumping weight classes. Like, she fought heavyweight back in January. She just made middleweight.
It's crazy.
It's crazy.
Yeah, I know. Even, like, I don't know. This is why pound for pound is a tough one for me, because what's the criteria? Especially women's boxing. You can't go accolades because the weight classes are so shallow.
You can't do accolades because there's more titles than there are like top flight females. Like,
yeah, exactly.
If you box and you didn't win a world title as a female, it's like, what have you been doing? But
it's hard to do that.
Yeah, so strength the schedule for sure. I understand where you're coming from, 100%. Like I said, I always give Katie her flowers.
It's so close. I think it's razor thin 1-2. You could put Shields number one easily because of the dominance and, like you said, going up different weight classes. Even though I feel like it's different with women's boxing, with Taylor, she actually has a loss on her record,
yep.
Even though she avenged it and beat Chantel Cameron. Chantel Cameron is a top five opponent. And then the wins over Serrano, the wins over Pursoon, the wins, like, she has good wins.
But there's also discussions about the wins over Serrano. A lot of people didn't think she won all three. Yes, and Pursoon. Pursoon's
I thought Taylor won all three against Serrano.
But there's a lot of people who don't.
The second one was the closest.
There's a lot of people who don't.
No, the first one was the closest.
First one I had a draw.
First one was so close.
First one I had a draw. But there's a lot of people that had Serrano winning two out of three of those.
But that's just better competition. That's another thing, too. It's very like Shields true. Can't help that. Shields can't help that.
Serrano was
doesn't have an adversary.
Like, you had two Hall of Famers fight three times. That's awesome. And so,
and
yeah.
Razor thin.
Now, yeah, I'm swaying myself based off of what you're talking about because of
it's very
strength
close.
Of schedule.
It's a very,
but what
very
I always do with too. Men, which I can't do in this situation for some reason, I just can't, I can't square this peg, is I always say with pound for pound, like, there's different criteria. Yeah, you do accomplishments. Yeah, you could do that. You can't do that women's, right? We already said that. But then I always go, who kicks whose ass when they fight?
Isn't that supposed to be the number one criteria?
It depends who you ask. That's my
point. Anyway, you take away weight, who's kicking whose ass?
That's always
skills.
My criteria when you talk pound for pound. That's always my criteria. I put them in the ring together, hypothetically, in a thought experiment. I got these two guys, doesn't matter the weight classes. I'm talking their prime. Number one, prime. Of each guy when they fight, who kicks whose ass? That's what matters when it comes to pound for pound. I just can't do that with these two for some reason. Clarissa's the size and the style, and then Katie. Like, I feel like I don't know. I feel like they're 200 pounds apart, even though they're not. But like, I just
it's so hard to say like take away the weights. But that's the biggest part of boxing is weight classes.
But with men, I have no problem doing it. No problem doing it. I can't do it.
But even with men, I have a problem with that because it's like
your
weight classes. It's just like. Oh, Roy Jones versus Roman Chocolatito Gonzalez. I just think Chocolatito Gonzalez is a tiny little man.
Yeah, but this is why I can do that because I go based on technique and I go on what is Chocolatito? He is a super technical fundamental volume puncher who is a great body puncher and can stop you. Like, he's a very, very dangerous guy. And actually, that style gives Roy Jones hell.
That's what I mean.
That's a really, really tough fight for Roy. Like,
take away the weights.
But I can do that because I can look at men's technique. Women's technique is not as size matters. The physicality matters a lot more in women's fight, even though they're not as powerful, whatever. But like, physicality, it makes a big difference. The technique,
nuance.
A lot of women's technique, it's kind of like it's a little blurry. With men, it's you can overcome. Like a guy like Shakur Stevenson, his techniques can overcome. Multiple weight classes, you know. I don't know. It's much more difficult, I think, pound for pound for the ladies, for me to conceptualize.
Well, I'll tell you one thing: I didn't do it based off race.
Where did that come from? I guess
this one guy says sounds about white.
Wow, so
it's like bro.
There's always that.
It's part of boxing. It's a very ethnic sport.
It's when people stop thinking. They stop using their critical thinking, and they just go that. When that comes out, I'm like, okay, cool. We're not
wait.
Thinking.
So, and that if that's the case, and are you putting Shields at number one just because she's black? And if you're a black fan of hers, like that part is odd to me. Like I don't understand that. I never made a decision or made any opinion in the sport based off that. But that's part of the sport. Like, that's a big part of what you were talking about with the crowd she brings out. It is a black culture event. Let's just not you know, mince words here. That's what this is. That's what Javonta Davis fights were. And I feel like with Javonta out, she's kind of taken that and run with it.
Yeah, I mean, you've got rap culture, you've got hip hop culture, you've got, you know, obviously the Papoose, you know, situation brings in a lot of that, but also just like the kinds of people that were, you know, the kinds of celebrities that we're seeing going to this. Yeah, you know, my dad doesn't know who these people are that are coming up to this fight. My dad's a white guy, you know, like, but like, you know, my sister-in-law's, you know, family does because they're Haitian and they're black. But like, yeah, yeah. There is a cultural aspect to it because of
100%
of that. And like that's just part of sports, guys. Welcome to sports.
It's part of sports, but it's very, very, very much part of boxing.
Yeah, boxing has a lot more of a socioeconomic. Yeah. You know, gyms are like that too. And it's so funny when the race thing comes up with like guys in gyms. Like we're like, for us, like. Gyms are the most segregated places because it's like there's literally different pockets of the gym where different races hang out.
But there's the Mexican corner,
100%.
There's the Puerto Rican corner where they all fight different.
Yep.
I remember I was at a fight once and I've had a group of friends there that don't watch boxing and someone said, or I might have said, oh man, this dude fights like a Mexican. And they were like, whoa, damn, what are you, like, because I'm not, like, that's like something out of the ordinary that I would say, like, in a normal setting. But in boxing, that's like a term of endearment. It's just a way to describe a lot of punches.
There's a lot of positive.
Yeah, like, a lot of defense out the window for the most part. And I was like, no, like, that's just how we talk in boxing. Like, your different ethnicity is how you, is, like, different fighting style.
Let me.
I thought that was hilarious.
Let me talk a little CA Chris Algieri history here. So when I moved to Vegas back in 2010 or 2009, Johnny Tacos was around, and that was the gym that famously Mike Tyson trained at, you know, in Las Vegas. It's no longer there. And you know, I was 9-0, I think 9-0, 10-0, something like that. And we were just bouncing around to every gym to get training, you know, to get sparring, not training, sparring. And my coach and I would come in, and we come downstairs, and it's weird because Johnny Tacos was shaped like a J. You would go downstairs and it would go in deep and then it would wrap around. And it was two rings, one in the front, one in the back by the tip of the J, and then there was bags in the middle. And each room had different like ethnicities. Like in the front was all like Caribbeans. Like it was like Cubans, there was Puerto Ricans, you know, like it was like, you know, there was some in there, and then there was like, and the black fighters too, and the black fighters were intermingling between the front and the middle, and then the back, which the ring was way smaller, was where the Mexicans were hanging out. So like it was like all the Mexicans were in the back, and then I came in, you know, for sparring, and they saw
where the white guys hang out.
There's no white guys. So I came in and I was like target number one. I was food, and also I'm tall, so like, you know, I was tall and thin. So they're like, all right. They call you. We got sparring for you. Go around to the back room. Food. With the small ring. And I was like, okay. And they put me, and I sparred with this undefeated Mexican kid, and we went at it. We went to war. And I'm a good body puncher. You know, the Mexicans are great body punchers. Ever. So I tune homeboy up, and especially going hard to the body. So the Mexicans loved me. They're like, yeah, come back anytime. Boom, I go and in front, I was like, oh man, you know, when you go to other gyms when you're a fighter, it's like, all right, this is hostile territory. You got to be on your A game. You know, these guys are trying to knock you out and drag you out the back, no problem. So I'm sitting there taking my shoes off and I see this giant menacing man walking up to me and I'm like, oh, here we go. I'm like, look up. And I know he comes up and he's like, and he's just guys and I says like, hey, and I stand up, you know, because I'm a man's coming to say something to me. So I stand up and puts his hand out, giant hand, and he goes, hey, I'm Mike. And I go, it's Mike McCallum. And I'm like,
body snatcher.
And I under my breath, I go, the body snatcher. And he shakes my hand and he goes, oh, you know who I am? I go, of course I do. You're Mike McCallum. You're a Hall of Famer. And I start rattling off fights. He's like, oh, I go, you're a bad man. And he goes, nah. He's like, I used to be. He's like, I just watched that sparring act there. He's like, you're a bad man now. And I was like, wow.
Every time he admired the body work.
It was the body work, exactly. So every time I came back in there, when I came down, it was like everybody's like, hey Chris. Like it was like just because they saw me spar and they liked what they saw, like that is what boxing is. I don't care what ethnicity you are. If you can box and you can fight, you get respect. And that's the beautiful thing about this sport and being in gyms. And yes, there is this ethnicity thing and racial stuff and whatever. But like, listen, at the end of the day, we all speak boxing.
Yeah, for sure. And it starts in the gym, starts in the ring, and then it goes out to the fans. And it's part of the sport. It is what it is.
I boxed well with a Mexican, and then a Jamaican man gave me my props, which spread throughout the whole gym. So
that's all you got.
And I'm a white guy.
You are. Love that. It's beautiful. It's a beautiful thing. Another beautiful thing, it was announced that Emmanuel Navarrete will be fighting Oshaki Foster October 24th on DAZN, according to reports. This is for the IBF WBC. Will the WBO title be on the line? We'll see. And the vacant Ring Magazine title, as both are ranked very highly in the ring ratings. Brilliant fight. One of the best fights you could make in all of boxing. Both guys are at a peak right now. They're at their best. They're borderline top 10 pound for pound guys. Style-wise, it makes sense. A just home run, a fighter's fan's delight type of fight between Navarrete and Foster.
It definitely a boxing head fan delight, like a hardcore
this isn't
like us.
Like crossing over into the mainstream.
No. I love this fight. It's great that it's being made. The only gripe I have, and it's not a little gripe, is Charlie Suarez.
He's getting screwed.
He's been getting screwed.
He might fight in Lomachenko,
which would be great. I hope he gets that opportunity. He gets paid because this
it might be for the WBO title,
which would be amazing. The guy deserves it. He just fought on our air on ProBox TV. I mean, he fought a solid guy, blast him out in a round. Like he came in incredible shape. It wasn't like he was like taking a tune up. He made 130. He looked like a world champion. The level of fitness that he was in, I was like, this guy is for real. And he's just such a nice guy, Filipino. He's a soldier. He's got a military background. His team is great. And you know, he wants that rematch. And he beat Navarrete. He beat Navarrete. He calls the cut. The cut was stopped. The fight was stopped. He should be a world champion right now.
That cut was caused by a punch.
100%. Like the replays, everything.
They got that so wrong.
So the fact that this guy doesn't get his shot and that this fight happens sucks. But this fight's great. So I could not talk about Charlie Suarez.
No, for sure. That's a big part of this. So the reason why I didn't say the WBO title is on the line because we just don't know yet, because Navarrete is the WBO champ at 130. He might have to give up that belt, vacate it, to go ahead with the Foster fight. And then Lomachenko, who is rumored to fight Charlie Suarez, would be for the WBO
Love that.
Title in October. And then the winners will probably meet. So in addition to Navarrete Foster being a really good fight, like we just talked about, you add in the Lomachenko factor, which is fun. I mean, he's still Lomachenko.
Like, there's a possibility we could get Lomachenko and Navarrete Lomachenko versus Foster. Those are cool fights.
I think Lomachenko really wants to be undisputed. Remember, he was brought to tears after the Haney fight. It's the only thing he had not accomplished. We're talking about a gold medalist, talking about a world champion.
He's never
been undisputed.
I'll tell you right now, he might not beat Charlie Suarez.
Right, I know. That sounds like a game. He's a guy who's been out of the ring for a long time.
Might not beat Charlie Suarez.
Who do you like in Navarrete Foster? Because this is, it's like, what do you prefer? Do you like the Tasmanian devil style of Navarrete, which when he is on, he is almost impossible to beat, or it's Foster, who has an unbelievable jab, master boxer, knows what he's doing inside of that ring.
I'm gonna say something very controversial. I like Navarrete by robbery.
Well, Foster always gets robbed.
Yeah, I think Foster stylistically and size and physicality will be able to handle Navarrete and his pressure and slow the pace down to a degree that he can get his shots off, or it's going to turn into Zepeda versus Roach, in which case the volume is too much. The guy who is good at boxing and slowing the pace down can't, and just gets at work the entire time. I don't think Navarrete stops Foster, but I could see him. I could see a very similar Zepeda Roach fight, or I can see Foster actually accomplishing slowing Navarrete down, hurting him, and being able to control him a little bit, and then losing a decision because, you know, they like the aggression of Navarrete.
It's so hard to figure out which Navarrete is going to show up. I think the last fight was the first time he actually had a nutritionist, which is just hilarious.
He looked really good.
He just was like, all right, I'll eat, like, like, not having a nutritionist this long into your career is absolutely batshit crazy to me. But the fact that he had one for this one, he's probably going to do it again, was my guess. It made all the difference. Yep. He looked unbelievable against Sugar Nunez. Unbelievable. One of the best performances of the year, Navarrete. He looked unbeatable.
Yeah.
Will that happen again?
He's phenomenal. I've called a lot of his fights for Top Rank. Like, he's got power. He throws combinations. He's got the weirdest style. He's got awkward, weird defense that's actually really effective. He's hard to hit. And he hits you with these strange, weird punches that generates a tons of power. He's a bad boy. He's a real bad boy. And he's going to go down in history because, what is he, a 2-3 division?
I think he's got one, definitely featherweight and 130. I don't know if he's below that.
Was he 22?
I think he's 22. I think he talked about going to 35.
So he was trying to enter the 3. I thought he was trying to enter the 4th weight class, but
I could be right. Let me look that up
because I know he was trying to enter like rarefied air.
I don't know if he'll. I know he wants to go to 135, and that's one of the biggest reason why I don't, this fight with Nunes. And I was like, I don't know. Like, Nunes is coming on strong. The thing with Navarrete is like, he's got his eyes set on 135. Like, he has had trouble making 130.
He doesn't beat any of the guys at 35.
Yeah, but that's why he was doing, I just don't think he could make 130 anymore. So he's like, I have to go to 135.
No, I knew
just
it.
Just to keep my paydays going.
He beat Dog Bay at 22. So he's 22, 26, 30. He was going for the 4th weight class. I thought so. So he was going for that rarefied 4 division champion against the Ukrainian.
Which one was that? Oh, yeah, the guy.
The one Keyshawn destroyed. Baranchik, exactly.
Yeah.
Looked horrible in that fight.
So Navarrete, with the nutritionist, is a bad man. And I think it's Navarrete's fight to lose. Foster can spoil it just like he can spoil any fight. What I'm doing right now with a lot of people do to Foster is they overlook him a little bit, or they kind of don't pick him right off of the bat.
Not this guy.
Well, you're picking. You think Foster will win, but Navarrete will get the nod.
I mean,
politics.
We're still far out. I gotta do some analyzing and watching these two. How I picture.
But Foster
together.
Looked unreal too.
Yeah, Foster's getting better all the time. Fight.
Beats Ray Ford. Beats a you know, the win over what's his name, Philly guy.
Fulton
is not aging well. Still a win.
Fulton just didn't show up. You know, I heard stories prior to the fight that he was like literally hanging out in Danny Garcia's bar, like during camp.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. But Foster's on a roll. He's in fight or flight fights for the last 10 fights. The guy's got his back up against the wall. It's like my Yankees right now. Every game is 2-1, 1-0. You're in a playoff game every game. That's Oshaki Foster. He's in a fighting for his life, literally every fight. Like, he's either going to get screwed on the cards, or they're going to try to take it from him, or, you know, he has to get a last second knockdown in the 12th round.
Or knockout.
Eduardo Hernandez.
He's a cardiac kid. He's used to it. He's good at it. He's used to like playing on the line of failure. And like, that's a rare ability to have, that little bit like that Jordan DNA, that Jordan gene, where you're like, I'm a buzzer beater, baby. And, Fulton's got that. Foster's got that, excuse me.
Yeah, he lost 2 of 4 fights between 2015 and 2016, Foster.
Dude, that was an absolute robbery, that first fight with Kensei Cao.
Well, I'm talking about even further back.
Oh yeah, he lost to...
Middle of his career, he lost to Samuel Tia.
Weird. Wrong weight class.
Ronaldo Chinilla.
Weird. Also weird.
I remember some of those because he was signed to DiBella, and I remember, like, this kid's good. He went to jail. He didn't have an easy early career, to say the least. But I remember, like, interviewing him and him saying, you know, I lost 2 out of 4 fights between 2015 and 2016, and I didn't know where I wanted to go in this sport. And look where he is now.
It just shows you how much he's, like, needed to develop and get better, because he's getting better. Like, he looks as good now as he ever has.
He's 32. He's still in it.
Yeah. He's getting close, though.
Depends a lot on... Yeah, I know he's getting close. And he depends a lot on the jab. He depends a lot on his movement, reflexes. So does Navarrete, too. Navarrete is not as old, but Navarrete is had those battles on the scale and lived the crazy life. I assume he lived a crazy life outside of the ring. I don't know why I'm assuming that. Like, he just seems like someone that does. That's kind of messed up on my part.
I mean,
is he crazy? Is he not? Have you heard anything about
his
him?
His nickname is Vaquero. You know, he's like, it's most likely, yes. He's a wild person. You can tell even, like, I'm in fighter meetings with him and he wants to fight people all over the place. So I would assume that, yes. So
I figured that. I just assumed it. I haven't had any firsthand. He's born in 1995. Do the math, Dan. He's 31. Navarrete. So it's 31 versus 32-year-old.
Yeah, it's I don't think there's that. Yeah, I don't think either way. I don't think there's a advantage there.
October is looking pretty good. We got Body versus Floyd Schofield.
Like that fight.
10th.
I'm glad Body's getting shot.
Yeah, and then Fundora returns. Not a good fight. And Fundora is fighting his mandatory October 17th.
Blah.
Not a good one. Not a good one. Not a good one at all. Other news here. WBO orders Shiraz versus Janibek at 168. The sides have 20 days to make a deal. Janibek has never fought at 168. Obviously coming off of the failed drug test last year, which he got stripped by the IBF. Did not get stripped by the WBO. Suspended for close to a year, but only had to serve like 10 months of the 12. And then gets awarded with a title shot right off of the PEDs. I don't think boxers should be awarded title shots coming off of PEDs. Like Ryan Garcia, Janibek, anyone, any fighter. Like we've been pretty clear on that.
Absolutely hate this. This is disgusting. It's a mockery of the sport. Just failing upward. The amount of fighters currently that are failing upward is absurd. And it's disgusting, and it's gross. It makes me want to take a shower. Failing PEDs, getting stripped, log jamming the whole weight class. Janibek screwed the whole weight class. 160 was actually developing into something, and he completely screwed a card. He screwed a weight class. Like, and this guy gets to walk right into a fight and fighting for a title. And listen, I favor Shiraz, but I don't know. Janibek wins this fight, then what? You talk about, you know, because he can. And
I favor Janibek.
I don't because of the time off and the weight class, but
I think if Janibek can be like, obviously the PEDs, I don't know how much of a role that plays. Like we'll never know. Like you've talked about it numerous times, the training effect, mm-hmm. all that. I think the pressure is going to give Shiraz fits. I don't think Shiraz can handle the pressure.
It's also the awkward. I don't think
he's good fighting back on his foot.
He's going to have trouble finding Janibek too. Janibek is slick and stricky, and he can punch and he's strong. We'll see at 60. But I mean, Shiraz is a 60 pounder too coming up. Who's come up? And he didn't look good his last fight at all. But this stinks of trying to give Shiraz an opportunity to beat this guy and to reestablish that the 160 issue. He was the best at 60. He just had trouble with the weight. And they're giving Janibek in the worst position possible. You're getting the worst version of Janibek. The guy who's been off, the guy who's clean, the guy who is coming up a weight class. Like, you're giving every opportunity to Shiraz, which still might not be enough because Janibek is good. It just stinks of that. It just stinks of favoritism towards...
Oh, it is favoritism.
Towards Shiraz.
It's favoritism towards both guys.
I think it's favoritism towards Shiraz, and I think it's just disgustingness for her.
See, that's interesting, because I didn't really think about Shiraz in this whole thing. I was just so upset about giving it to Janibek. I just thought the WBO had a golden opportunity to do the right thing and make a statement.
And they have been lately. They just didn't do it here.
That's what I mean. It just showed, like, I love the WBO. I think they do good stuff. But it just shows, like, all these sanctioning bodies make these decisions, and I'm not saying why they made this decision. I'm not about to say, the ties between Janibek and Top Rank WBO, do the maths there. But it's like someone was petitioning for Janibek, obviously, to get this mandatory spot. WBO just didn't give it to him because they felt like it. There was someone talking to the WBO. They had a ruling. And they went with Janibek over Jacob Bank, who's 20-0 with 11 knockouts, who petitioned for the mandatory position. Because you do petition. Like at these conventions, that there's a whole day where the someone goes and speaks for you. Hello, I'm Dan Canobio. I'm representing Chris Algieri, and I am petitioning for Chris Algieri to be the mandatory for the WBO title at 168. And you give your – you state your case, and then they listen, and then they come up with their decision.
And then Dan forgets that his suitcase is underneath the under his chair, and fights get made.
Right, you said that, not me. It's been done. I mean, it's boxing. It's a crazy sport. I just thought WBO had a chance to make a statement here and be like, you know what, like Janet Beck, like, yeah, you're back. You served your time. Bud Crawford came out and said, I probably would have fought Janet Beck if he didn't pop.
Yeah,
that hurts.
That's what I mean.
That's a punishment right there.
He hurt the whole sport. I mean, logjam that weight class. Messed up all these title opportunities. Messed up big fights. Messed up his own career. I don't care about his own career because you did the drugs.
Well, there's the theory out there that he was taking. There was like some exemption, like taking it for some type of
not that drug.
That's no right. Way. Thank you.
Not that drug. No.
I don't know how to pronounce it. I'm not good at that. Melodronum.
I forgot what it was.
Melodronum. Yeah. Melodrone. I've said it wrong in a past episode. I just said it wrong again. It's a heavy drug.
Yeah, no, and it is no place in this sport. You know, so I don't have peace for guys who get caught, especially doing certain kinds of drugs.
I don't know, but I'm putting out all the facts here or all the full story here. He did serve the suspension, even though it was like backlogged 10 months. He gets stripped of one title, IBF, doesn't get stripped of the WBO. He loses out on the Crawford fight. We don't know if that 100% was going to get made, but that hurts. For Crawford to come out and say, like, yeah, I probably would have stuck around for, like, another fight, and it would have been against Janet Beck. That's a massive payday for Janet Beck. So he did suffer. But still, with that being said, does not deserve to be inserted right away into a weight class that he's never fought at. Like with this Jacob Bank guy, I think he's deserved it. I think he could have put him at a mandatory spot and put Janet Beck right behind him. Let Janet Beck fight someone else at 168, then put him against Shiraz. Like I still want to see Shiraz against Munguia or against some other names at 168, Mabili, Canelo. Before I want to see, I'm not banging down the door to see Shiraz versus Janet Beck. I didn't even think about this fight until Thursday. When this came out,
yeah, no one did. But initially, my first thought, it's failing upward for Janet Beck, and there's no one clamoring for this fight. This was made behind closed doors. This was made in a weird situation for both of these guys. Like you said, they're both getting a leg up in different ways. I don't like it. It stinks.
That's interesting. Interesting to think about it from Shiraz's standpoint. You think Janet Beck's an easier fight than Munguia?
No, it's a bigger name, so it's more not a bigger name, but it's a because he can't fight Munguia right now. He needs a fight right now. Like so, Munguia.
Munguia fought in May.
On the Benavides card. Is it an easier fight than Munguia? Yes, it is. Munguia looks so goddamn good his last fight, and he's a real 68 pounder, and he's got momentum. Janet Beck has the opposite of momentum. So yeah, this is a fight that is completely stacked in Shiraz's favor to have every advantage over a very good Janet Beck. If they're neck and neck in terms of the way that you're looking at them, and then Janet Beck's coming from down there, even if Janet Beck is a little bit better, but he has to deal with the new weight class being off. I think this is a stacked deck for Shiraz. This is why this thing stinks. That was the first thing I thought. I was like, oh, they're trying to feed a big name a fight that's going to
be think different, bro.
Yeah. I'm a fighter.
Different.
I've been in there.
You think different. I did not think of Shiraz in this for a second. I was like, fuck this. I was like Janet Beck, this is BS.
My first thought is, yeah, okay, this guy's failing upward. That's gross. It's disgusting, like I said. But then I'm like, also like, well, I know why. Because this is for Shiraz.
I know the WBO does have their claws, right? If you're a champion at one weight and you go up to another weight.
If you fail a drug test, though, you're and should be stripped. You can still step into a new weight class and fight right.
But like if they wanted to go to the book, let's go to the book. Let's go to our rules.
Pretty sure somewhere in that rule book, if you fail a drug test, you get stripped.
They didn't strip him, the WBO.
That's so if we go by the rules, which apparently you don't have to.
They should have stripped him.
Yes, you pick and choose the rules now? Okay. I mean, this is boxing.
Well, Janet Beck has high, he has Aegis. in his career as his manager,
very good
manager.
Is
a very powerful guy.
Yes.
He has Top Rank as his promoter. I believe he still has Top Rank as promoter. I'm pretty sure. That's two big and heavy hitters there. Two big heavy hitters advocating for you.
Two heavy hitters that are probably pretty pissed at him, though.
Right, but they still have invested in him. They still need to see a return on their investment. And the return on their investment is him potentially being a world champion at 168 and maybe getting a Canelo fight.
Also probably getting paid pretty good.
Janibek has already tweeted, Canelo, you are next.
Probably going to get paid
pretty good. Turned replies off.
Probably going to get paid pretty good for Shiraz too, though.
That's what I mean, failing upward. Like, once failing again, upward. Like...
This is our current...
Like, what's stopping fighters now from doing this, Chris?
Bro, nothing. That's why they do the drugs. Like, there's so many... I was thinking the other day, I'm like, we
haven't talked about... Nice 10-month vacation.
I'm like, we haven't talked about drugs in a while. I'm like, I'm going to get back to getting on my high horse about drugs, getting on my podium and my soapbox and talking about drugs. Your favorite fighters are on drugs because they can fail upward. They can fail test and then make $15 million, guys. Like, it's ridiculous. Your question is like, why wouldn't these guys do it? It's stupid not to. You extend your career. You make tens of millions of dollars. Other guys are on it too. At this point, you're not even getting a competitive advantage. You're leveling the playing field, because there's so many guys that are on shit. And I don't know. We go through phases where people get caught, and then we go through phases where we don't see fails. Is that really because they're not using them, or are they just not getting caught? It's because they're not getting caught. It doesn't stop, guys. The drugs are lousy. Our sport is lousy with drugs.
Oh, for sure. Been something that's been said on this show for years. So what suffering did Janibek really go through? He didn't fight for a year.
He missed the Crawford. He missed the Crawford payday.
Yeah, but that wasn't 100. Crawford could change his mind tomorrow on that. He could just... said that to piss him off. He says a lot of things, Crawford. This guy goes back and forth,
especially
on his
lately.
Word.
Every interview, Janibek loses momentum, credibility. Obviously.
Okay, but the ultimate thing is he's now fighting for a title here.
Yeah, he's already been a multiple time world champion. He's fighting for another title, and he has an opportunity to make a lot of money. He wins this fight, he very well could be in the Canelo sweepstakes. He would be.
Why couldn't the WBO put him five?
Put him at
work
like
your way
five.
Up. Yeah, put him at five. Got to win two fights. Let's see what you look like at the weight. Let's see you bounce back
for all the reasons that we said earlier. You've got a very powerful manager. You got a very powerful promoter. You've also got Shiraz's team on their side. They're I'm telling you, they're pushing for this fight too.
That's crazy. That could backfire big time on Shiraz. I'm not 100% sold on Shiraz. I don't.
He looks. He did not. He looks so.
I think I think
he looks so ordinary his last fight.
Yeah, I think he fights. He's a bully. I think he has a lot of holes. I think everyone at 68 has holes.
Yes, but
there's no like clear cut. That's why the Canelo and Billy fight is pretty interesting to me. Lester's in the mix. He's fighting at the end of the month.
Yep, Pacheco looked really good recently, but he's looked beatable.
Now Janibek's in the weight class.
Janibek's in the weight class, and Janibek has
question marks.
I don't know. It's an interesting weight class. Listen, vulnerability is entertaining. You don't want a guy who could just beat everybody all the time. Like you want to question who beats who. Vulnerability is not a bad thing. Yeah, he's nasty. He's got a fight coming up, right?
Yeah, he's fighting. He's got a defense. I've had this debate for years. It's like in a weight class. But do you want one guy that's like the Mayweather,
no,
who reigns over it for years, or do you want parity? Like we used to see at 154 in the mid 2020s, right, when Charlo was fighting Rosario, was knocking off Charlo, the dude from Philly, Julian Williams was beating the guys. Like, you know what I mean? Like parity.
Would
you rather dominance?
I want late 90s welterweight. I want Oscar De La Hoya and Cheeto Trinidad on a collision course, fighting Obakars, and having tough fights and fighting Iquartes. I want, we don't know if De La Hoya is going to beat Iquarte. He almost doesn't. I want to see De La Hoya and Trinidad. Whoa, who's going to be the guy? And then we get a guy. I want to see, it's funny that Trinidad was in all of these. I want to see the middleweight tournament where Trinidad powers through, Jermaine, awesome. William Joppy and
that was sick.
And Bernard, no one thinks Bernard's going to win this whole tournament and get past Trinidad and he fucking knocks him out. Like, I want that. I don't want a dominant guy. I want tournaments. I want studs fighting each other.
Yeah, I mean, Canelo still kind of is that guy.
I forgot to mention Keith Holmes. Shout out to Keith Holmes. Good fighter.
Keith Holmes. Canelo is still at 168. I know he's almost looked at as like 1 foot out the door. Good weight class.
I don't look at him like that. I think he's going to beat.
And then he becomes a champion.
Yeah.
When I saw him last month, he was, you know, it's just a quick interaction I had with him. He was, when I brought up in Billy, he was shadow boxing.
No, he looks fit. He does look fit.
Big smile on his face when I brought up in Billy. And he's like, yeah. Like, he knows, like, this isn't Skull. Like, he's not going to run. And it's not, he knows it's not Crawford.
Nah, it's.
And Billy has holes.
Yes.
Like that fight. It was like Halloween night. That fight. That's October, too. October. October should be a good month.
Good month.
We're still in August, though. Still summer, guys. I'm going to go jump in the pool after this. Touch grass, as the kids say.
I'm going to go work in the garage and sweat.
What are you
going to
do in there? So, power drills?
The Team Algeria home gym is being painted tomorrow, so I got to clean up the walls. I had a window cut into the cement that I had to cover and block off, and then putting up the mirrors and the floors and the hex lights, and then getting my weight training equipment. I got the painters coming tomorrow.
The gym is going in the garage.
The garage will become the gym. Well, half of the garage will become the gym. The other side is going to be my workstation. Because I picked up woodworking as a hobby now in my 40s.
That's sick.
Yeah, it's pretty fun.
I love that. So what's the gym got? Is it just like a heavy bag, or is it like a gym?
No, like a weight training gym. It's going to be, I got a full rack with cables, you know, full dumbbells, kettlebells.
You put in the rubber floor?
No, I'm doing a sport track, like a garage type, so you can even the heavy weights can go on there. So it's like a plastic clip in. Looks really good, but it does have a square colored ring. So if we do mitts in there, whatever. I'm trying to see if I can hang a heavy bag in there. Definitely, we'll probably put like a double end bag because that's pretty easy to
get
set
that
up
Ryan
and down.
Garcia bag.
That little floppy tonsil thing.
Yeah, thing that made him famous on TikTok.
Yeah, no, I'd rather. I think I like a double end bag a lot better because you're moving your head, you're slipping, you're sliding, and you can move around it. And I mean, you could do that with that bag too, but I don't know. That bag's more for TikTok.
It is. All right, we'll be back Thursday previewing Teofimo Lopez versus Rolly Romero.
I'll be
in California. Chris, you'll be home?
I am home, yeah. I got my family in town.
All right.
I got my family in town that they come in that day.
Wild Algiers. Wild Algiers.
Wild indeed. Wild indeed.
All right, everyone. Keep your hands up at all times. Protect us all the time. Stay out of those DMs. We will see you next time.